If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I am Alex, and we are here with a very special episode with Romy Weltman. Romy, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Alex.
Very excited to chat. Romy plays Martha M. Cypress on Revival, on Sci-Fi. As frequent listeners of the podcast know, we're big fans of the comic book from way back, really enjoying the show. I'm going to give a little bit of a spoiler warning up top. I think we'll generally talk about the show, but the fourth episode, as this is posting, just aired. So if you haven't watched it on Sci-Fi, do go watch it or stream the episodes that are up on Peacock. But spoiler warning for all that stuff. That all said, I wanted to take like a big step back to start. You've been acting for a long time now. You did like 60 episodes of Backstage. You've done multiple horror movies, guest starred on series. When you get something like Revival, when you book a job like that, does that feel like a step up, or does it feel like this is another brick in the wall of my career that I'm building?
What an interesting question. I think naturally I have to acknowledge that it does feel like a step up just in terms of the role. Sure, the size of the role is one thing, but just like the intensity and the levity that this role requires, I think just as an actor, it's really a dream come true. And it's, as I'm getting older, I'm having the opportunity to play these characters with more emotional depth and more life experience. So every role I think I play as I continue to grow up within this industry feels like a step up naturally, whether it's even a small guest star role or a bigger role. It's more about what the role really requires from me, I think.
Well, let's talk about the casting process. I know you've probably talked about this in a lot of interviews, but talked to Aaron Kuntz previously about bringing you on the show, but I'd love to hear from your perspective what that was like.
Yeah, the audition process for this one was interesting. Just it started for me with an audition for Kay, Em's roommate. So I had actually read for a couple of friends, you know, within the actor world, we read for each other for auditions. And I read for a couple of my friends who auditioned for Rhodey and Em. And I was like, I want to audition for this project, but you know, you just got to wait and see what happens in this industry. And I got an audition for Kay, and I loved the writing and I fell in love with everything about it. But a part of me was kind of like, who's this M character? I do feel like I resonate, which is why I love playing characters that are different to me as well. But I do feel like I resonate more with the darker characters sometimes. I just feel like in my life, that's more what I play or have played, but I've had the opportunity to play other characters too. And I love that. But I was like, who's this M character? Fast forward a couple months, I get an audition. I get an email saying still searching for M Cypress. And I was like, yeah, there's no way they're still searching. They're probably just covering all corners. Threw it up on tape very quickly. Was like, hey, we kind of like this girl. Do you have anything else that you can provide for us? And I didn't have, the content that they wanted from me. They were looking for stuff from a different show that I had done that hadn't come out yet, so I couldn't give it to them. And then they were just like, can you throw 10 more pages of this Revival world on tape? And I did. And then within a day, I got an email asking if I would shave the side of my head and cut my hair. And I was like, sure, why not? I mean, I have other people that are involved in those conversations. I'm always like, yes to anything, which is why I have to have other people a part of those conversations. But it all happened really quick for me. And I hadn't even met any of the team members or anyone involved before getting cast and getting to set, basically.
That's got to be a great feeling, though, that you go in, nothing against the actress who plays your roommate, but going in for a side role, and then suddenly you get bumped up to considered for one of, if not the main roles on the show.
Oh, it was such a dream come true that they were still even searching for M, because I do know that they had done auditions prior to me even auditioning for K. I think they were auditioning girls for M at the same time. So really what it was kind of just a blessing in disguise that they hadn't found their M. Mm-hmm. And that gave me the opportunity. MJ, who plays K, is so perfect for the role also. Mm-hmm. Like, she's just so funny and talented, and she's incredible in everything she's in. So I think everything always works out the way it's meant to work out in these situations. And she, working with her was a dream. I don't want to give too much away, but you see a lot more M and K throughout the series. And I think we're fun.
Awesome. This is another thing that I talked to Aaron about, but obviously the relationship between M and Dana is maybe the most important one in the show, I think. And so that means your relationship with Melanie Sgrafano also kind of needs to be, at least behind the scenes and on camera, the most important in the show as well. So what works about that chemistry, do you think? Because it does work on screen, but what was it like developing it, and how did it develop over the course of the season?
Well, oh gosh, I feel like Mel is going to be like, Romy, my ears are ringing because I constantly am talking about her. So her ears must be ringing. I don't know if you've heard that saying, but your ears are ringing when people are talking about you. No, Mel's just the coolest, easiest human to connect with ever. And I don't want to put her on a pedestal, but she is on one in my life. And I'm sorry, but she is just the big sister of big sisters. She's the lead of leads. She reminds me a lot of my big sister, Stacy, in real life. So I think just naturally I felt this protective energy. And Mel had reached out to me when she found out that I was cast. I didn't know that she was attached to the project, but I got a message saying, it's you and me, sis. And something about hearing from her before even getting there just made me feel so safe. And day one, I think went on a walk after like a big dinner with everyone. I helped her find her car. And on that walk, we just got talking about these characters and about our experience and about what we want to experience over the next 3 months. And I think that just really allowed us to have a look at each other. And I think the beautiful thing about Em and Dana and where we got lucky is that they don't really know each other off the top of the season. They don't. They think they have this idea of each other, but they don't really know what the other one is truly going through. And I think with that, Mel and I just getting to know each other over the course of the season really helped Em and Dana explore. Also, I hung out with Mel's family a lot because I was there in New Brunswick alone, where she was there with her husband and her two children. So just getting to see her kind of be that protective human to everyone just naturally makes you feel like you're lucky to be one of the humans you know she'll protect. I feel confident that Mel has my back if I need. So I'm just really lucky.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a side topic, but I've interviewed a ton of folks who film in Canada over the years. Obviously, it's an enormous country, but it feels like, from what everybody says, that it's almost a small community at the same time, where everybody is very supportive of each other and nice. Well, what has your experience been like?
Yeah, I have to say the same thing. The industry is very small. I've been fortunate, which is kind of what's nice, is I got to New Brunswick and I didn't know anyone. And then I saw two camera department members from backstage who were like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, it's been 10 years. So just like that natural sense of family that you have on set, there is usually one familiar face with that. I knew MJ through mutual friends prior to actually working together, which was very nice for us. I obviously, now I get to say I know Melanie personally, but Melanie is a name that you know within the industry, but specifically definitely the Canadian industry. And I feel like it's so supportive, and I've made some of my best friends. I mean, I still have best friends from backstage years of my life. And that just goes to show we've grown up in this crazy industry together. And I do think also, without getting too in depth about it, but the entertainment industry is a weird industry, and it can really be hard to understand when you're not in it. Just like any other field of work, I don't understand my sister's problems when she's a lawyer. So I have no idea what a day like is a day is like for her. But just having people that really understand the fact that you don't always have consistency, or that you might get called to set at 4 a.m. and you might not hear from somebody for 17 hours. Having that mutual sense of understanding within our industry is always so helpful. And I think that's why we are naturally able to be there for each other.
Yeah. Getting back to the show a little bit. So like you were saying, like Melanie is definitely, she's the big name. She's the in the cast, and it is an ensemble drama. But at the same time, N is really the central figure of the show. She is the center part of the mystery of the Revivers, which is going to become even more so potentially as the show goes on, just based on the comics. Her murder is the driving force of what's going to happen going forward. So given that, did you feel any pressure there in terms of everything really being built around your character, or did the ensemble help diffuse that a bit?
I think, look, I haven't spoken about this much yet, but I think naturally there's a bit of imposter syndrome taking on such a big role with names like Melanie Scrofano, Andy McQueen, David, James Elliott. Like those are, that's not a joke, right? Like when I saw my face next to theirs, I tell them all the time, I'm like, I'm so lucky that my first big press release, my face is next to your guys' faces. Like that's a very big deal. So naturally, of course, I think there was that type of pressure and just wanting to do well. I think also working on a show that has a following from beforehand, we're doing an adaptation. I want to make sure that readers of the graphic novel feel seen and feel like their M on screen is the M that they read, they fell in love with through Mike and Tim's work. So I think, of course, there was pressure. But then when you're in it and you're working with, like you said, there is such an ensemble cast and just working with such talented, driven people, kind of when you're on set, you're just able to forget about the pressure and just enjoy the play and the work of it. Stephen Ogg is somebody who always says, I love to play. And those words are just so important on set too. So kind of like leaving the pressure at the door, forgetting it, and also trusting the fact that Aaron and Luke are trusting me, and Sci-Fi's trusting me, and Mike and Tim. So just kind of hoping that they know what they're doing and that I can know what I'm doing along the way.
Yeah. I was going to ask about Stephen Ogg actually, because I'm definitely a big fan of his work, and you have mildest of spoilers. You have like a very brief scene with him this week where he is so intimidating. I imagine he's not like that on set at all, or am I assuming too much?
Stephen is the coolest person ever. I always joke with him, like, you finally, him and CM Punk, I'm like, you finally made me cool with some of the, like, my guy friends that I've grown up with for life, that and they're like, oh, you've done it. I'm like, okay, great. Now I've done it. But no, he's just such a cool person. He really loves art. And I think he loves to make art. And I think he wants to have fun while doing it and wants to make sure everyone around him is having fun and collaborating. I think collaboration's a huge thing for Stephen, and no, he's such a pleasure to have on set. He's so much fun. His energy is, oh my gosh. But then when you're in the scene with him, I'm not gonna lie, he looks at you and he's got this look in his eyes and you're like, oh okay, I don't want to scare this guy. So the scene you're talking about in episode 4, that was actually the first scene I shot with Stephen. And when we are getting really close to each other, without spoiling anything, that honest like step back was probably real. It was kind of like, oh, sorry, Stephen Ogg. Also, huge fan. He's insanely talented. Like watching these actors on set was a masterclass every day. I just got to learn so much that just kind of getting to see him in one way and then see him become Blaine. So cool.
Yeah. You had mentioned fans of the graphic novel, and I kind of wanted to ask you about pressures of joining a comic-based show, because you've probably gotten this. Every interview that I ever see for anybody on a comic-based show, on a comic-based movie, first question is like, real quick, and it's always so pointed, like, have you read the comics? Have you read the comics? What did you think of the comics? And I'm not going to ask you that, but I'm curious about, like, what is that like? Like, what is that pressure like to get that constantly and potentially feel like you do need to deliver on that in some way?
I think, so the pressure, There is pressure. I can't lie, because you're, it's anything really, with anything that's pre-existing. If you're doing an adaptation of anything that already has a fan base, there is that fear of wanting to make sure that you're making those people happy. Those people are the reason that you're making this adaptation to begin with, because people love this original piece of work. So definitely a little stressed. I think the fact that we did make so many differences in our show just to help create these backstories for our characters, because we're taking something on page onto a screen. So there does have to be that additional backstory and levity to these characters. I think that helped, just knowing that M was a bit different and that I got to bring a bit of myself to M. That did help a lot, but I definitely read the comics. I wasn't aware of the comics beforehand, I will be honest. But I think that was kind of a blessing in disguise for me. I think reading the comics as we were filming helped me develop my love for M and also kind of figure her out on my own a bit. Mm-hmm. So I think that kind of worked. When I first got cast, I'll tell you, I haven't said this yet, I was a little like, are people going to be upset that I don't have green eyes? That was a concern for me. Just because I've seen things like that in terms of like appearance and aesthetics. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a fear of mine at first. I didn't want to upset fans, but I haven't seen anything. So please don't come for me for not having green eyes, okay? Please.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And you probably know this as well. We've known Tim Seeley and Mike Dorton for a really long time and hung out with them and interviewed them, whatever. And they're two guys who are like, do whatever you want. It's all good. Take our ball and run with it. So any pressure is definitely not coming from them. It seems like, if anything, it's internal to the show to try to deliver there.
Of course. I think the pressure and the quote unquote imposter syndrome and stuff like that, that comes from care. Mm-hmm. I think if I didn't have those kind of fears, then there would be more problems, because then I wouldn't care so much about the work. But there is so much love and care that goes into these things. And a big part of it is it's so personal to you also when you're acting, and then you're sharing it with the world. So kind of just separating all of those things and making sure that everything's done with love.
Yeah.
What if everything you've been taught about happiness is wrong? We chase careers, approval, more stuff, hoping it'll finally make us feel fulfilled, but it never sticks. What if happiness isn't out there, but already inside you, just waiting to be unlocked? Discover the book, The Happiness Experiment. Every person has a unique happiness type, and when you understand yours, everything shifts. You'll stop chasing and start creating joy on your own terms. Discover your happiness type with a free happiness type assessment. Go to myhappinesstype.com. That's myhappinesstype.com. It takes just a minute and it might change your life. Then grab your copy of The Happiness Experiment at Books A Million. This isn't just a book, it's a practical framework, a journey inward. It's a tool to help you reconnect with the happiness that's been waiting inside you all along. Pick up The Happiness Experiment and start your happiness experiment today.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
One of the interesting things about M on the show is that she has brittle bone disease. Obviously, some other things have happened to her where she's come back to life and she has superpowers and all of these things. But how did that impact your physicality of the character?
Yeah, it was interesting. I did a lot of research on OI because I was familiar, but I didn't have a lot of knowledge. And I thought that with the physicality, I find that there's kind of two M's. There's M prior to Revival Day, then there's M after Revival Day. And I do think before Revival Day, we haven't seen too many flashbacks just yet, but there is this smallness. There is this constant, like, arms crossed kind of fear of letting go. But I also think with that, in certain situations, M isn't so scared. I just think around her family, there's a big difference. I think she's experienced so many broken bones. She's experienced the pain. I don't think she feels that the pain is as painful as the way that people are identifying her and kind of othering her. I think that the emotional pain is much heavier than the physical pain a lot of the time, especially at this point in life. But later on, it helped with physicality because I'm 5 foot one, I'm quite petite, and I haven't had the opportunity to play such physical roles. And without spoiling anything, M does get more physical throughout the season. And I feel like she's finding all of these things out about herself. And with that, I kind of felt the freedom of being a little awkward and being a little like, I don't need to look so cool and so smooth and like musical with my movements. I kind of get to be this awkward still person because it is this person experiencing so much for the first time.
Yeah. I mean, you're touching on the action scenes, and I wanted to ask you about that. Like you said, there's more coming. I've seen a couple of episodes ahead, but you do get, you know, like the big Scythe action scene in the first episode. Given what we're talking about with the way M is, she can't necessarily be like Buffy the Vampire Slayer or Winona Earp or anything like that. How did the take on the character, the brittle bone disease, the reviving, etc., how did that affect the blocking for action scenes?
Ooh, yeah. Well, the first one in the barn, I think the big blocking for that would be, it was, again, more so emotional in terms of M didn't know what she was capable of. She thought she killed Arlene. She didn't, but she thought she killed Arlene for a hot minute. And that, like, the sense of fear of, oh, I meant to, but I didn't mean to do this. I didn't know what I was capable of. Picking it up normally would be a heavier thing, but for her, it was so easy in this moment. So it kind of didn't change too much. In the bar scene in episode two, that one was interesting because obviously she breaks her arm on the chair, M, while Dana and Ibrahim are talking about her brittle bone disease. So that blocking was very important of, like, it had to hit the chair at a certain angle that would make sense for the bone to break. And not just it breaking because it's M, but how would a bone really break in this situation if you had OI? So things like that were pretty heavily discussed, but more so than that, it was a lot of, like, the emotional levity of each situation. So in the bar scene of, like, that trigger moment of hearing this word zombie in hell and turning around and then kind of enjoying the freedom of knowing I'm healing for the first time and knowing I can't die and kind of enjoying the pain as a new form of, you know, just something to rely on, a new vice kind of. So in terms of that, a lot of the blocking did come from, like, where is this coming from emotionally? Why is this happening?
Yeah. I do want to put a huge spoiler warning here because I want to talk about something in this week's episode. I think this is the biggest scene in the episode. M gets a haircut, which was enormous. I was actually very excited to see that. Was that a relief to finally get that? I assume you were wearing a wig beforehand?
Yes, I was wearing a wig.
Okay.
Was it a relief? It's a good question. It was so funny because basically day one of me being on set, when I met the entire crew, we did just a quick camera test, and I did one with the wig and one without. And nobody really picked up that I was the same person, but nobody knew me yet. So it was kind of just like, whatever. Day one, we filmed me without the wig. Then for the next 2 weeks, I was in a wig completely. And we shot 5 episodes at once. So it was kind of like in and out in terms of that, because in episode 4, the haircut happened. So for episode 4 and 5, I wasn't wearing the wig. But the first time I wasn't wearing the wig on set, I sat at lunch and I waved to like 5 people to come sit with me. Alex, nobody came to sit with me. Nobody knew who I was. It was so sad. It was actually so sad. It was amazing. So I was like, hey, the transformation is working, but it was very sad. But yes, there was. So jokingly, there was no relief at the beginning. So I was like, hi guys, I've worked with you for like 2 weeks now. We've done some crazy stuff together. But no, it was a relief. I love the wig. I think the wig, Dan Campbell, who created the wig, did such a wonderful job. I think it really helped in terms of physicality, again, of hiding behind this hair. I think hair holds memories. That's kind of the point of Em cutting her hair. And I think that I loved the wig in terms of all of those scenes. It was so helpful to have this thing to hide behind. But then, yes, there is this huge relief of like, I shaved my head for this role. Let's show it. Mel used to joke with me being like, I want to see what we did this for. Like, let's go get the wig off. So there was that relief of like, okay, I really did shave my head. I cut my hair. We get to embrace it. We get to see it. We get to style it. Also, that scene was just we had such a buildup to filming that scene because there were wigs involved that were going to be cut and we still needed a wig for later in case there were flashbacks or stuff like that. So, which maybe there are, maybe there aren't, I don't know, but you'll have to watch and see. But we did need wigs obviously to be spared. So I think that scene was just nerve wracking for everyone involved. Like, Romy, please don't screw this up too much. I don't give good haircuts. I really don't. I tried during COVID for the people that I live with. And let's just say it's a good thing it was COVID and nobody had to do that. Okay? It's not great, but the scene turned out really, really wonderfully.
Yeah. In the past couple of episodes, but it definitely heats up this episode, Em has a pretty cute romance going on with Rhodey. What's it like working opposite Caleb Horn?
Caleb is such a fantastic human. He's such an incredible giving scene partner. I think for us, we also spoke a lot about Em and Rhodey's relationships and where it was going and where it was heading. And acknowledging the fact that Rhodey does so much for Em, and just creating the safe space that she's never really experienced. I think there's also this beauty that Caleb and I have discussed of like, Rhodey didn't know Em prior to Revival Day. And that is just such a relief for her, I think. But Caleb just in general is so wonderful. And we also had an incredible intimacy coordinator, Lise, on set for all of the intimate scenes, who was wonderful and just made it feel very safe and comfortable. And it was a really great environment to work in. And I think just for us, the biggest thing was that we were depicting young love and romance in a very cutesy way, but also a real way, and showing that like, even when you're together, you're still so independent. You can be independent. You can have these independent thoughts and you can feel lonely even with you're with somebody that you care about. So it was just really fun exploring our relationship. And he is, I mean, the shed scene, he is just, you can't take your eyes off him. He's incredible. And watching that was really cool. Like live watching Caleb in his zone on that stage was incredible. He really is a singer. I'll plug him quickly as Em. I listened to a playlist on repeat all the time. I love music. It helps me a lot with characters, but Caleb Horn's music was in my playlist. Later on, I found out that he had a Spotify and that he releases his own music. So I added some songs in there that I found very helpful. And as a friend, I'm very proud of him.
Do you have Em's playlist up anywhere on Spotify, or is that more of a private work thing?
I don't know if it's public, but I could make it public. It's not private. It's okay.
All right.
I mean, I feel like... I mean, I'm wearing a My Chemical Romance hoodie. I mean, you can see it except for you, but I'm like, music can be so personal, and maybe there's certain lyrics and songs that trigger certain things that maybe I wouldn't get too deep into, but I'd be happy to share the playlist. So I'll link it. I don't know what my Spotify name is. I can check. Yeah. I'll check at the end and then we'll link it at the end.
All right, we'll figure it out. This is a bigger, broader topic, but watching this show, particularly here in America, and I know you filmed it a while ago, but it's really hard not to see parallels with things that are going on with registering revivers, rounding there's one episode where somebody suggests rounding them up and putting them in camps. I understand you're in a different country, but I'm sure you're aware of what is happening here and in the world. What's your take on the timeliness of the show? And also, can we and anybody listening in America come live with you guys?
Yes, you're welcome here whenever.
Okay, great. Thank you.
For sure. Totally. There are so many parallels. One thing that I really did love about the script is that there are so many conversations in there. There are so many broader topics that need to be discussed that are themes within our show. I think it's more relevant than ever right now, but I think these conversations are always relevant too, given everything that we've experienced in the world. And I think that it kind of just goes to show that othering people is never really the solution to anything. You can see, look at even M not feeling safe to go talk to people about what she's going through because she's so scared of what the consequences are. And this goes to show that if we're shutting down certain conversations, we're not giving people the resources that they need. So, there's huge parallels that I don't think were necessarily meant to happen because this was filmed a long time ago. But again, like these are themes that keep reoccurring in history, which is just insane and crazy. And that's why I'm really grateful to be a part of a show that is able to have these conversations done so intricately as well.
Well said. And to get back to a slightly lighter topic, I'm not going to spoil it, but there are some big, absolutely bonkers things coming up later on in the season on the show. In the broadest possible sense, what was it like working with things when they get more special effects heavy on set?
Ooh, fun, messy, very messy, really fun, very exciting. We've got some epic people a part of our crew and post-production team that we are so lucky to have. Our prosthetics team was crazy. Look, there are so many cool action-packed scenes that I'm also not involved in that I've had the honor of seeing already, and I'm just obsessed. There is, I can't talk about it, but one of my favorite scenes ever is in episode 6, and it's not an M scene, that's all I'll say, but it is so good. Those scenes are so much fun. They take a really, really long time to do on set, that part I cannot lie. So as an actor, it's challenging and fun. It's challenging just because sometimes we're doing shots in different ways in terms of starting with close-ups instead of wide shots because, we need people being clean first before they get dirty or, change clothes or something like that. So, those days are just always a little different, but they're so much fun and so exciting. And those are the days we usually get really cool additional daily crew members on set. And I always love meeting new people and hearing about their jobs and their experiences in the industry. So it was always so much fun. I think, I can't talk. Never mind.
Okay. I would love to talk about it as well because episode 6 you mentioned, that's the one where I was like, oh, this is going off the rails, like totally complimentarily, but just things get wild at that point.
You know what? I am allowed to say it because somebody did tweet, at what point in the season do things really throw you? And Aaron Koontz, he tweeted that it was episode 6. And I was like, yep, it really is. It really, really is. Yeah. But I think people will really hopefully be happy. And I think comic book readers will be very happy with that episode too.
Yeah. We were. I'll speak for all comic book readers. Last thing, I know it's probably way too early about this, but have there been any talks about season 2 at all?
Look, I love that question. Unfortunately, I feel like I know as much as you do. I feel like people give actors way too much credit with what we know about what's going on. Like for the record, I think you probably saw some episodes before I did. So that just goes to show you where the actors are in terms of knowing what's going on behind the scenes. But I do want to just acknowledge to all the fans out there, it's really, really, really important to just keep watching at 10 p.m. every Thursday on Sci-Fi and then rewatch the following week on Peacock. Couldn't hurt to just watch both. We love the 10 p.m. Sci-Fi viewers, especially. You can always join our live tweeting also. I just hopped on there. I think my username is Ro Weltman. I should really double check that. I literally made this account last week and I'm very new. Oh, X. It's not even Twitter anymore. It's X.
It's all right. We call it Twitter still.
See, I'm new.
Yeah.
But that's the most important thing, is just to keep watching and keep tweeting and keep following and keep pushing for more. But hopefully we do come back, because I think there's a lot more of revival that's needed after this season. I think you'll get a really good fix after season one, but I think you'll need a lot more coming up.
Awesome. Romy, congrats on the show. I'm really excited to see the final couple of episodes, and fingers crossed, I do hope it gets picked up for season two.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for your support, and just I love hearing from fans of the comic book too.
Our sister, I'm going to bring forward and yours and give it to you now. And he said, oh, wow, that's great. Thank you. That's so generous of you, Carl. That's great. But his wife, my sister-in-law, went ballistic. She said, this is too much money. This is wrong. I don't want anything to do with it, and stormed out of the room. And I thought, well, that's not what I expected. Oh, my God. So I realized from that this was not an easy thing to do. So I learned a lesson from that, and I knew that I had to do this authentically. I had to do it right. Otherwise, it was not going to work. So that happened. And then the third thing that happened was that I was looking at my financial statements, and I had more money there than I was really using. It was sitting there. I mean, it was growing, making profits and so forth, but it wasn't being used. I wasn't using it for me. I wasn't using it for things that I really cared about, not for my people. So I thought, well, if I have all this money now, why should I wait until I die? Why don't I bring it forward? And then, you know, it was a long process for me to come around to that, but that's what finally started this. And I said, well, I'll do it now.
Let's back up just a bit. Tell us a little bit about your new book. What is The Happiness Experiment?
Well, this is a recording of the real events with real people who I decided that I would bring forward the inheritance, the money I had for them in my will, and made it a prequest. So it was a chunk of money that they were going to get while they were still young enough to enjoy it, and I was still alive to see it happening. So I saw what they were doing. So when I sat down with them, I talked about money and happiness and how one can connect. And I said, look, I'm going to bring this forward to and give it to you. But what I want from you is a plan so that you use this money. So it's really a big benefit for you. I don't want this to overwhelm you. And they said, what kind of plan? I said, I want a happiness plan. And they said, a happiness plan? What's that? So you know, nobody seems to have a happiness plan. But it's one of the most important plans you can get. And it doesn't have to be very complex. What is it that makes you happy? What values do you want to pursue? You know, what goals and dreams do you have? And you can pursue them. And so I got them to write a happiness plan. And then when I saw the plan, I gave them all the money all at one time. And so then they took it and I watched them with their plan. I saw all their plans, what they did and how they became happier. And so, you know, that had to be written about. So because I wanted other people to see what they did so that they too could do the same thing.
Which PreQuest is the most unique one you've come across?
Well, it was a very, very painful and sad story because two dear friends of mine had a beloved daughter and she was hit head on by a drunk driver and killed. She happened to be 8 months pregnant at the time, so that killed the granddaughter too and also their daughter. They were totally, totally wiped out, devastated, and they died emotionally. They had decided that they could never be happy again, that it would be wrong to be happy. They didn't deserve to be happy because their darling daughter had been killed. Tremendously painful, awful, awful story. So they were grieving 6 years later. And I met with them and I told them how much they had added to my life and how much I was so grateful to them and that I wanted to express the gratitude. And I put them in my will and they could accept that. And I said, but I want you to have it now. And they said, oh, no, we can't accept it. They turned it down. Well, we worked. And I said, look, I'm leaving it open. So several months later, I think his wife persuaded him to do it, actually. And so they said, okay, we'll do it because if we're going to wait until you die, why not do it now? And they did it. And it wasn't the money, interestingly enough. They said it was the coaching that made the big difference. That changed their mind, their mindset from being so negative, we'll never be happy again. We don't deserve to be happy. And the coach turned their thinking, their mindset around and said, look, it can be, you can be happy again. And they started to get the mindset of happy people. And now you cannot believe what these people, they're traveling all over the world. They're in Tahiti right now. They climbed Kilimanjaro. These people are loving life. And it was a major change. That is one of the most heartfelt, wonderful results of the and in a sense, she said, the wife said, this PreQuest changed, saved my life because we were no longer living. We were dead. And this brought us back to life.
Yeah. I mean, dealing with grief and many of us have, when you're in those depths, it can be really difficult to find your way out of it. And, often it looks like there isn't a way out of it. And, sometimes you want a map. Right. And it looks like this concept could be a good map for you if you're that. It sounds like it was for these folks. I always like to end interviews by asking, is there anything that I didn't ask that I should have?
How can my listeners benefit from this book? What should they do? What would be good for them? And so I'll answer that question. First off, think about happiness. Think about being happiness. You deserve to be happy and you can be happy, but you have to make it as a choice. I'm going to increase my happiness. Just that, if you make that realistically, I want to and I'm going to increase my happiness, that choice. And then talk to people about it. Talk to a husband or wife or a girlfriend or a friend, a therapist or coach. Talk to somebody about it and say, look, I made the decision that I want to be happier and I'd like you to help me create a happiness plan. And then work on it. And it's not that hard, but it is challenging, but it's a wonderful exercise. And if they do it, I guarantee they will increase their happiness. I guarantee it.
Carl Barney is the author, and the book is called The Happiness Experiment, A Revolutionary Way to Increase Happiness. Carl, where can people find the book?
Wherever books are sold, and it's now available for pre-order from Amazon, and they can go to thehappinessexperiment.com, and they can pre-order it there, and I hope they will.
Carl, thanks so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. It's been fun.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.